Keep the faith, guys. We're going to win this.
We will win this, and we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it.
They may sound confident, but we don't yet know if Joe Biden or Donald Trump won the U.S. presidential election. This is Thursday, the 5th of November, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Also ahead, we'll explore how the courts might deal with President Trump's claims if he takes the election there. The COVID outbreak continues to expand. International agencies are trying to help people who experienced the biggest storm to hit land in the history of the world. That and more on today's VOA Asia. Americans are still waiting for the final vote tally in battleground states to determine whether incumbent Republican President Donald Trump will continue to be the country's chief executive for the next 4 years or be replaced by his Democratic challenger, former Vice President Joe Biden. White House correspondent Patsy Wiedekaswera has the latest.
Street parties in Washington, D.C. and in Miami, Florida on Tuesday night as an anxious nation awaits the result of the presidential election between incumbent Donald Trump and Democratic nominee Joe Biden. Neither Trump nor Biden has yet secured the minimum 270 out of 538 electoral votes for victory. U.S. elections are not determined by the popular vote. Jeremy Meyer teaches American politics at George Mason University.
It looks like it's about 50-50 for either of these candidates. And what is extraordinary is it's turning out to be a rerun of the 2016 election. It's going to come down to almost exactly the same three states, Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania.
Wisconsin, Michigan, and Pennsylvania are traditionally Democratic states that Trump won in 2016. Both candidates campaigned heavily there in the final days leading to the vote. In the early hours Wednesday from his hometown in Wilmington, Delaware, Biden urged his supporters to be patient.
Keep the faith, guys. We're going to win this. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Minutes later, Trump responded, saying Democrats are trying to steal the election in a tweet that Twitter labeled misleading. He later spoke from the White House.
It's a very sad moment. To me, this is a very sad moment. And we will win this, and we, as far as I'm concerned, we already have won it.
Despite the president's claim of victory, ballots will continue to be counted, and it could be days before the winner can be determined. Latrice Washington is a professor of political science at Orobayan University.
Because of the pandemic as well, we have seen so many more individuals voting absentee paper ballots. So the demand for that has increased. So that's going to slow it down quite a bit as well.
Americans cast their ballots in relative calm, despite heavier than usual police presence in some polling stations, as law enforcement braced for election violence following a bitter, divisive campaign. With a close vote in several key states and dozens of lawsuits over voting rules that could impact which ballots are counted, the months-long presidential campaign must wait longer for a conclusion. Patsy Wiedekaswera, VOA News at the White House.
We now welcome Steve Reddish, VOA's senior executive editor. Steve, you have covered many elections. Has there ever been anyone like this?
Nothing like this. Certainly the volume of votes, especially the volume of mail-in ballots, and the divisiveness in the country. It's the 2000 election comes the closest, where, you know, the next day of election day didn't come for more than 30 days. But this takes the cake.
Where do we go from here? Where does this election stand? And for people around the world, especially in Asia, listening to this, what's next?
What's next is really counting all of the votes. There was a tremendous number of mail-in ballots due to the coronavirus pandemic. Mail-in ballots was made easier in many states. And in some of these states, like Pennsylvania and in Michigan and in Wisconsin, they haven't had to handle mail-in ballots in the kind of volume that we saw this year. So basically, what's next is to really is to make sure that all of the ballots are counted in Pennsylvania and Michigan and in Wisconsin, as well as in Nevada and in Arizona and in Georgia. And in North Carolina, all of these states are pretty much still enough votes to tip the balance one way or another.
President Trump, late last night, early this morning, Wednesday morning, made it clear that he will go to the courts if he doesn't like election results. On what grounds did he say he would do this?
He will likely, and his lawyers will likely, challenge the validity of ballots that come in after Election Day and whether or not states can count them. Many states do have provisions that mail-in ballots, absentee ballots, can come in more than a day or two, or sometimes a week afterwards, depending on the state, because they understand that the mail service is slow, as long as they were postmarked before Election Day. So I think the president will likely challenge many of the absentee ballots on validity grounds.
We have seen a new security fence placed around the White House. We have seen buildings and businesses boarded up in major cities throughout the United States on the possibility of violence breaking out after this election. Have there been any reports of anything like that?
There have been no reports of any major or even minor significant incidents. For the most part, the country was calm and voting all day on Tuesday, and now waits breathlessly for the results in a few key states.
Steve Reddish is the BOA Senior Executive Editor. Steve, thanks so much for doing this. We're happy you're with us on BOA Asia. As you've heard, the presidential election may be headed to a drawn-out legal battle. President Trump has for months threatened to take the results to the courts, and a number of states have already been fighting battles over ballots. VOA's Lori London spoke with University of California Hastings School of Law constitutional law professor Joel Paul. She asked him about the validity of Mr. Trump taking the election to the courts.
There's no significance under our Constitution to election night. Historically, elections were not held on a single day. They were held over a period of months. And the only date that really matters is a Monday, December 14. That's the day on which the electors each vote in separate states. So as long as the states have gotten all of their ballots counted by December 14, that's the relevant date that determines what electors are going to be casting ballots in the election. And as far as the president goes, though the president may not be willing to accept that outcome, it really doesn't matter because the electors' votes will be counted by Congress on January 6th, and the new president will be sworn in on January 20, according to the Constitution.
University of California Hastings School of Law constitutional law professor Joel Paul speaking with BOA's Lori London. Democrats and Republicans battled for control of the U.S. Senate in half a dozen closely fought races Wednesday. Brian Wood has more.
U.S. Democrats and Republicans both flipped Senate seats in Tuesday's elections. As of early Wednesday, news outlets reported that Democrat John Hickenlooper won his race in Colorado, while Doug Jones, the most vulnerable incumbent Democrat, lost as expected to Republican challenger Tommy Tuberville in Alabama. In order to take the Senate majority, Democrats need to win four seats, or three if Democratic challenger Joe Biden wins the presidential election. That would give Vice President Kamala Harris a tie-breaking vote. Republicans currently hold a majority of 53 seats in the 100-seat chamber. How it will look after the election may come down to 14 competitive races, including 12 Republican-held seats and two by Democrats. The ultimate makeup of the Senate may not be known for some time. In Georgia, a Republican-held seat is now headed to a January runoff after neither candidate secured a majority. So far, Republican incumbents Lindsey Graham and John Cornyn fended off Democratic challenges in South Carolina and Texas. And, as expected in Kentucky, Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell won re-election. A Democrat victory in the Senate could lead to a new era in U.S. politics, if the party holds the House of Representatives and captures the White House.
That's Reuters' Brian Wood reporting. The number of COVID-19 cases worldwide has surpassed 47 million, with over 1.2 million deaths, according to the latest data tallied by the Johns Hopkins University Coronavirus Resource Center. BOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has the latest.
The United States leads the world in the number of COVID-19 cases, with about 9.3 million infections, according to the latest figures on Tuesday. Experts warn the problem will get worse if Americans don't do more to contain the virus, especially as the colder weather sets in.
Rates of growth are alarming. They seem to be as bad or worse than they were back in the spring.
A sobering warning as Americans went to the polls on Tuesday, many of whom took the steps to guard against the virus. President Donald Trump has played down the virus, saying for weeks the country is rounding the turn. Rival Joe Biden has criticized the president for his handling of the health crisis. In Utah, Chief Medical Officer Russell Vinick says it's difficult to find qualified staff, even though there's enough protective equipment.
Our big issue is the humans, the people you need. It's not about hospital beds. It's about trained, specialized providers to take care of those patients.
Elsewhere, India and Brazil have the second and third highest number of cases. Russia is fourth with over 18,000 coronavirus daily cases, bringing the national tally to more than 1.6 million. Russia has ordered people to wear face masks in some public places and urged regional authorities to consider an overnight curfew on bars and restaurants. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
We continue on VOA Asia. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies is appealing for $3.8 million for emergency assistance to an estimated 80,000 Filipinos whose lives have been devastated by Super Typhoon Goni. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
This is the fourth typhoon to hit the Philippines in the past month, and possibly the most devastating. Super Typhoon Goni, which made landfall Monday, has barreled across the Philippines, leaving a massive trail of destruction in its wake. International Red Cross Federation spokesman Matthew Cochran tells VOA the typhoon has destroyed whole villages, damaged or demolished 90% of the homes and buildings.
We are seeing an increasing severity in storms that we believe is very much linked to climate change. And as I mentioned earlier, there are reports that Super Typhoon Goni may have been the strongest storm ever to make landfall anywhere in the world.
Cochran says it is too soon to know how many people may have been killed, injured, and rendered homeless. He says assessments are underway to determine the extent of the damage and the needs. However, what is clear, he says, is people who already are very vulnerable are those who are hardest hit by this catastrophic storm.
So we're talking here about farmers, small landholders, people who are really living on the edge of success and survival, laborers, people who don't own land and exist on the back of their labor, as well as fisher folk, and again, people who are really living on a knife's edge.
Cochran says these are people whose livelihoods, health, and well-being already had been disrupted by COVID-19. He says the typhoon has left tens of thousands of people bereft and in need of support for a very long time. For now, he says, saving lives is most important. As a consequence, search and rescue missions will go on for as long as feasible. Immediate priority needs, he says, are to provide survivors of this disaster with food, clean water, shelter, medical care, and other essentials. Once the emergency phase is over, he says, the Red Cross is likely to appeal for more international support to fund long-term recovery and rehabilitation programs. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
South Korea's military said on Wednesday it had taken into custody a North Korean man who crossed the heavily fortified border with North Korea into the south, prompting an urgent search operation. Libby Hogan reports.
The man was first spotted crossing the barbed wire fence at around 7:30 p.m. Tuesday night, according to local media, and was then found about 10 a.m. the next morning on the eastern side of the demilitarized zone that divides the Koreas. That's according to the South's Joint Chiefs of Staff, who said in a statement that an investigation is being planned.
That was reporter Libby Hogan. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team. That includes Jim Stevenson, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lee. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Please stay safe and enjoy the day ahead.